guess that means we're supposed to begin or something. Let me introduce myself. My name is Dan Katoff, and I'm the director of the News Bureau for the Lutheran Council in the USA, and I'm based in New York City. And for those who don't know what the Lutheran Council is, it's an agency of five Lutheran churches. The Lutheran Church in America, the American Lutheran Church, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches, and the Latvian Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, a small exile church of about 14,000 members. My job within Lutheranism covers several areas. Obviously, I work for the Lutheran Council, so I do report on matters concerning the Council. For your information, there are some functions that you might have heard of, but you might not have associated them with the Lutheran Council. The Office for Governmental Affairs, for instance, in Washington, is under the auspices of the Lutheran Council, as is Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. And we have a number of other areas, but those are probably the two most visible. And my job also involves reporting on things affecting Lutheran World Ministries, the USA National Committee of the Lutheran World Federation, Lutheran World Relief and Aid and Development Agency of the Lutheran Churches in the United States, and anything interesting, ecumenical, or anything else that involves Lutherans. So I have a fairly wide portfolio. And much of my work, too, involves liaison work with the Lutheran World Federation in Geneva. That is, when we have meetings in North America or events that are of interest to the Lutheran World Federation, I would mostly, in most cases, I would be the main contact person in the media for them. And we also operate as a fairly independent operation within the churches. We, of course, are supported by the churches, but we have somewhat of a leeway to investigate stories that may be of a controversial nature and do things that maybe always don't sit too well with the bureaucracy, but yet still are our jobs and are supported by the churches. So I do have that function as well. I was at the World Council of Churches Assembly. It was an 18-day meeting which began July 24th and ended on August 10th. And unlike too many, well, as like too many other people in the press, for reasons of my own time and budget and whatnot, I was only able to be there for the last few days of the assembly. And just so that my own function and expertise is clear, I'm not in any way connected with the World Council of Churches, and I went there to report on what would be the Lutheran emphases or angles to the World Council of Churches meeting. So when I was there for that short period of time, I basically concentrated on that, but I did talk to a number of Lutherans, both from the United States and worldwide, so I do have the perspective that was gathered from those interviews. I've only been in Holden Village since Friday, and I guess I would be remiss if I didn't leave off with a few impressions of the village. And being a New Yorker, as you can imagine, this is quite an unusual experience for me. When I first came here, my orientation session, I was struck by a great sense of fear when I heard talks about bears. And then I thought how odd that was, being a New Yorker, where I live in an area on the Lower East Side where I contend with muggers and addicts and everything every day of my life, or at least every day that I'm in New York. And I realized that I could tend with certain kinds of fear, but not others, so I guess I'll just have to get used to that. And also, along the Holden Village heritage, though, I had, of course, fantasized what I would do if I would run across a bear after I was told that they exist up here. And knowing that you can't give them $50 or your credit cards, I had to think of something else. And I really don't know what I would do. I just had the hope that I wouldn't have to contend with that situation. But I noticed your use of words and your unique expressions, way try or whatever else there is. And I can contribute to that lore if you need, for those people who counter bears and are mugs, so to speak, you could say you had a bear mug. So. You can blame me for that. I guess I hope I don't have to go too much into the background of the WCC. And if anybody has any questions, perhaps we can leave that to the question and answer session later. I will say, too, at this point, there are other people here at this meeting, John Yoder and others, who Mr. Glitz and from Brazil, who were at the assembly. And I would appreciate it if they might have an opportunity during the question and answer session to also respond to questions as you see fit, because I'm sure that some of these people were there throughout the entire assembly, and their perspectives would be different from mine. And I should also say, as a qualification too, that my perspectives are not the only ones, so I'm fully cognizant of that. The World Council of Churches, as the National Council of Churches, has been the subject of criticism from various groups, right-wing groups, public media, and others. And shortly after the World Council of Churches meeting, those criticisms stepped up again. And rather than try to recapitulate what has been going on in the last year and a half, the Reader's Digest articles, television program 60 Minutes did sort of a scathing attack on both the National Council of Churches and the World Council of Churches. I thought what Larry mentioned in his remarks this morning probably were as good a summarization as any, and that is an article from the Wall Street Journal that appeared Friday, 2 days after the WCC meeting ended. So they wasted no time jumping into the attack. And by the way, this is their lead editorial. And if I may, I'd like to read excerpts from that. I'll probably end up reading about three-quarters of the entire article. But I think it gives you a good sense of the tone and the tenor of where the critics are coming from here. The World Council of Churches has just descended from a mountain in Vancouver. There are mountains in Vancouver, by the way, with a stone tablet saying that the focus of evil in the world today is the United States. The U.S. is trying to, quote-unquote, contain the aspirations of Central American people, the Council said in its just completed sixth assembly. It accused the Reagan administration of trying to, quote, destabilize the Nicaraguan government, renew international support for Guatemala's violent military regimes, resist the forces of historic change in El Salvador, and militarize Honduras, end quote. The assembly opposed, quote again, any type of military intervention by the United States, covert or overt, or by any other government, end quote. It didn't see fit, however, to name any other names. You can see they were just getting warmed up here. Indeed, the assembly rejected a proposal for an immediate Soviet withdrawal from Afghanistan in favor of a resolution. Basically, what it did was support the United Nations efforts in trying to procure peace in Afghanistan. Indeed, the assembly rejected a proposal calling for an immediate Soviet withdrawal from Afghanistan in favor of a resolution allowing Russian troops to remain in Afghanistan until an overall political settlement is reached. And this is the journal's own example. That is, when the freedom fighters are crushed. Just to make sure, American delegates at the assembly voted with their Soviet and East Bloc counterparts for a call for a cutoff of arms supplies to Afghan freedom fighters. Then it goes on, and this is what it's mentioning now is something that if you were at the assembly, you'd be hard-pressed to even know this happened, because it was one of the sidelights that was brought up by the press but still received a lot of attention in the public media. Moreover, the council refused to hear two appeals from Christians in Russia begging for a, quote, helping hand to the persecuted faithful. I'll skip a little bit here. One example, Deacon Vladimir Rusak of Moscow also wrote to the council asking for help against religious persecution. He said he had been prevented from writing a history of the Russian Orthodox Church after the 1917 revolution by the church's own hierarchy and the KGB, which confiscated his archives in January. Here's a quote. I believe in the Lord, I love my church, feel concerned for her future, and wish to serve her, but not by a compromise of conscience. That price which is exacted from our church leadership, and which I'm beginning, being urged to pay, he said. The council didn't take up the appeals because that would have interfered in, quote-unquote, the internal situation of a member of the WCC of which the Russian Orthodox Church is a part, said WCC Executive Ninan Koshy. Then it goes on to further examples of what happened in the last WCC assembly in Nairobi in 1975. And then it goes on, and it's probably at this point ascending its own mountain. All of this may come as a surprise to many of the approximately 500 million members of the more than 300 Protestant, Orthodox, Anglican, and Independent churches represented at the World Council, but it shouldn't. The Council has long supported many of the same leftist revolutionary causes, aided and abetted by the Kremlin and its proxies. There have been charges that offerings from collection plates have been handed over by the Council to guerrillas, possibly for arms purchases. An expose of the WCC and the U.S. National Council of Churches earlier this year by CBS's 60 Minutes concluded, quote, whether it is by design or mischance or deliberate manipulation from outside the churches, church money and the churches themselves are found to be supporting highly political movements, end quote. The World Council is supported by mainline U.S. Protestant denominations. After its Vancouver revelations, it would seem to us that supporters have something to do. A good time to start would be with Sunday's sermons and editorial. As you can see, they were not happy with what happened in Vancouver. I guess I will approach, for me, what were significant revelations from Vancouver from probably about the 180 degrees opposite extreme. And that is a couple of small personal vignettes that at least tell me something about the way the World Council perhaps operates and the value of an assembly like the one that just took place. And a couple of these things were gathered from observations and others were from interviews. I talked with a woman, Janice Harmon, who's a black American Lutheran Church representative at the World Council of Churches, who, by the way, was elected to the Central Committee of the WCC, which is its major decision-making body between assemblies. And I was really struck by her comments. First of all, she was there for 18 days, as I was not. And also, she had the ability to be with a lot of delegates, which I didn't have, so I was trusting in her impressions of the assembly more than mine. I spent an inordinate amount of time in the press room and writing stories and trying to track down Lutherans. So she just said the most important thing for her, even though she was concerned about a number of issues, but it came down to something which she described in perhaps best in an evening that she had with her black brothers and sisters from Africa and the Caribbean, in which she only described it as a song fest in which they all tried to out-shout each other and out-sing each other. And she got a sense of community there that she never really felt she had before. And she had a marvelous way of expressing words and images, and she said it was a flesh and blood experience. Unfortunately, those experiences are limited to those people who actually took part. And there's, of course, a way of describing that, but for her, that was one of the most important things. And she also said something that I thought was interesting. And she said, "I will never have a blasé feeling when I look at the map of the world again after the assembly." And that's something that we can also have, whether we attend a meeting like the WCC assembly or not, is just to realize that other people are in other parts of the world are suffering and are real as our neighbors are real here. The other thing was perhaps even more peripheral than that comment, but yet I think it was still important. During one of the final days in the debate on the peace and justice resolution, a woman delegate from Germany got up and she wanted to include some condemnatory language about the U.S. Deployment of the cruise and Pershing missiles in Europe. And that, as I remember, did not go through at that point. And one observer in the visitors' gallery was quite incensed by that. And he shouted obscenities from the visitors' gallery. And, of course, the guards came over and surrounded him and quickly quieted him down. And as journalists are sort of wont to do, a number of journalists went over to see what was happening. And once things were quieted down, they all left and dispersed. And I don't know whether this, a lot of times you feel that part of reporting is just being in the right place at the right time. But I continued to watch this guy after people had left, as there were some guards that continued to stay around him. And Dr. William Lazarus, who's the head of the Faith and Order Commission of the WCC, who was one of the people who shepherded the document on baptism, Eucharist, and ministry through the Faith and Order Commission, the document that was approved in January of 1982 in Lima. And I'll get to that later. But he walked up to this fellow, and he sat down and he gave him a hug, and he just took him outside and started chatting with him. And he sent him to the hospital and where this fellow could receive help. He was mentally disturbed. And he was also a Lutheran.
So was Lazarus.
Yeah, so was Lazarus. I mean, I'm not casting any aspersions on Lutherans there, but it just struck me, though, that it was the first time that I had really gotten that image again from the WCC assembly, although this is probably open to conjecture. I said, despite what the Wall Street Journal might say and despite what everything else might say, this really is the church. It might not be the church the way in which, you know, somebody from a Missouri Synod background like myself really considers the church to be, or other people from the Orthodox faith or something else, but it is the church. I just thought to myself, at a political rally, this person would have been, you know, strong-armed and sent out and to who knows where. But there was a dimension of love and concern there that I thought was worth noting. Of course, one of the ironies, of course, of trying to report such a huge and complex event is no matter what you want to do, I was trying to weave that in somehow, and when I filed my story under deadline pressure and all of that, I was unable to incorporate it just because it really didn't fit anywhere, but I will take the opportunities to relay that story whenever I can. Getting to the assembly, and I hope that that background was helpful to some extent, and we will have other people who will be able to also contribute to some of the substantive parts of the meeting. I had an interview with Bill Lazarus, and one of the things that I think came out of the WCC assembly, which you will not read in the Wall Street Journal editorial or in some other publications, is, and the most significant thing in the eyes of some of the people that I talked to, again, these are not universally held beliefs, just something that was mentioned, though, by a number of people and mentioned very strongly, was what they felt was a sincere push at Vancouver to take church unity seriously. And this comes from several factors. One is the document that I referred to, the Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry document of the World Council of Churches, which was received and strongly endorsed by the Assembly in Vancouver. And that document is what the theologians call a convergent document, that they see theologians from various communions, including the Roman Catholic Church, which is not a part of the World Council of Churches, but has representatives on the Faith and Order Commission, and the Orthodox, and Lutherans, and Anglicans, and independent Protestants, agreed in January of 1982 at a meeting in Lima, Peru, that there was sufficient agreement on these three key areas, baptism, Eucharist, and ministry, for at least the beginning of a push towards church unity and a realization that the church, the Christian church, is unified and not divided in these areas. Of course, there are other areas that still remain to be worked out, and a serious question is the orders of ministry. At the Vancouver Assembly, to give you an example, they had a Eucharistic service, which many people again pointed to as one of the highlights of the Assembly. And in this, they used what was called the Lima Liturgy, a liturgy based on the BEM document and developed by the Taizé community in France, and which, by the way, I hear you're going to be using tonight in your Eucharistic service, so you can see that for yourself. And during the problem at the communion service, and at least this is one of the things that was reported on, is that even though there was the Eucharist, that certain participants, that is the Roman Catholics and the Orthodox, by really the problem with their participation in the Eucharist at Vancouver was the fact that they didn't recognize the orders of the person who was presiding over the Eucharist, and that was Archbishop Robert Runcie of Canterbury. And so for some people, there was some talk about the Assembly that this is still a scandal for the churches and still a point of divisiveness for the churches. But BEM is pointing to the unity that already exists and the hope that these other areas of common concern and division at this point can still be worked out. Lazarus, in the interview I had with him, was hopeful that maybe even by the year 2000, that through the various theological dialogues that exist on both the bilateral and multilateral level between various Christian traditions, that even the Reformed element of the Protestant churches and the Roman Catholics and the Orthodox might be able to come to some agreement on the ministry. And that's a pretty hopeful prediction, I think, on his part, but perhaps something that he's aiming for. By the way, Lazarus, who is, as John pointed out, a Lutheran, is leaving the directorate of the Faith and Order Commission and will become a pastor of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Manhattan in September. I guess the other thing related to that, and Robert Runcie, the Archbishop of Canterbury, pointed along, made some remarks at the Assembly along these lines when the Church Unity document was received, that the Church Unity and the concern for humanity that is perhaps represented in the social and political statements that were also to come out of the World Council of Churches really have to be considered as not being separate, but they must be considered together as part of the same concern. And he had a quote which I ended up using and I think is significant. He said, it's not a situation of either or, but both and. The two have to go together. And other people pointed out during the Assembly that this was something also that they hadn't heard at previous WCC assemblies, the concern for church unity and also the concern for humanity being talked about, and a serious attempt to tie the two together. They stress the significance of that for the WCC as well. One of the other things that Runcie mentioned, and this gets into an esoteric area that I'm somewhat familiar with, part of my job with the Lutheran Council is that I sit in on all the theological dialogues that take place on the national level between Lutherans and Roman Catholics, Lutherans and Episcopalians, Lutherans and Orthodox, which a dialogue that will be beginning this December, and Lutherans and Reform, that is the Presbyterians, the Reformed Church in America, and the United Church of Christ. Runcie addressed a concern in his talks to the assembly that I think is also worth noting. Oftentimes, these what they call bilateral dialogues between two Christian traditions have oftentimes had a life of their own, for lack of a better word, that, you know, Lutherans do their thing with the Reformed and they do their thing with the Roman Catholics, and Anglicans do their thing with the Roman Catholics. But very seldom are the various bilateral dialogues welded together in a way which relates to anything of a larger concern. And of course, the Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry document is that larger concern. And again, by chance only, the first session of the assembly that I was in at, I just looked around for somebody to sit next to, and they were talking about the Church Unity document, and I sat next to Lazarus, who had put the thing together. And when Runcie got up to speak, and he made this comment, that the bilateral dialogues must be tied together with the multilateral dialogues, that is, in his case, a very important international dialogue, the Anglican-Roman Catholic, must be understood in the light of what the World Council of Churches document on baptism, Eucharist, and ministry is trying to do. Lazarus almost jumped out of his seat when he said that, because he said, that's what I've really been striving for, to get these bilateral discussions, again, between two Christian traditions, in line with a larger goal of church unity. Anyway, all of that, as you could tell, was not mentioned in the Wall Street Journal article. Other statements and resolutions were passed on Central America, referred to here, Southern Africa, including one on Namibia, the Middle East, and others. I'm not really going to go into those too much. I think they are significant and are going to be referred to the churches for their own consideration and study. But that would get us further into different topics that one could spend several sessions like this alone on those topics. What I wanted to point to, and just simply as a way of wrapping up, and then I might ask John if he would like to make some observations, is that one of the main reasons why I went to the World Council of Churches Assembly was that in 1984 the Lutherans are also going to be holding a worldwide assembly in Budapest, Hungary, and it's going to be in July of 1984. And I just wanted to note this to make people aware of the fact that this thing will be coming up soon, and that they can perhaps watch for some articles that will be appearing on the preparations for the assembly, and to note that this is also within the Lutheran community as something that we can look forward to as well. So, John?
Well, I think we want to get started having questions around the circle. What I ought to limit myself to is the kind of purely formal description of what we were doing until people like you came along to find out what the results were. Why did it take 18 days? There were 800 delegates from 300 churches, 835 slots, not quite all filled. They're technically the decision-making body. They very soon approved the selection of one committee to deal with drafts of statements like the ones that were cited, another committee to nominate the next central committee, still another to manage the conference process itself, and one to talk about future World Council of church's programs, the things that are done by staff and by commissions through the next 7 years. Those groups then started dealing with the nuts and bolts agenda, and the other 700 had another kind of program, which took the bulk of the time. First, platform input on 8 different issues.
All the Christian concerns for God and mankind in the world were divided into 8 areas, and on each of those areas there was some speech making and some documents, and then the whole gang broke up into 8 groups and studied those issues for several sessions, and out of those discussions drafted statements, and those issue statements also came to the plenary to be discussed and received, not adopted as a formal position because they were too bulky and poorly drafted for that, but report on the relative consensus of what people think on those matters. Some of those had to do with Christian witness, some with public matters, one with justice and human rights, one was peace and threats to peace. So that drawing up statements on 8 issues was one major part of the program. Another part was still smaller in its scale. Everyone was assigned to a group of 20 people called small groups, which in the early days of the conference just got acquainted. They were computerized, randomized, so that you were together with people from other communions and other parts of the world. Get acquainted, then share your responses to the first events, and out of these you could also draft statements of conviction, and they could percolate upwards and get into the drafting process if there was something you were convinced about. But the main value of those was personal acquaintance. So those groups met almost daily. Not everybody came, especially important people didn't, because they were in the other committees. But ordinary people, and even bishops, were ordinary in the World Council because there were too many of them to put them all in the committee. My small group had 5 bishops. We got acquainted as persons. The metropolitan from Bulgaria gave us each a little bit of rose perfume, which is something that that country is proud of. And in other ways, we just shared personally, and those were the friends that you said goodbye to the last day. Then there was the statement-making process, which produced some of the statements of the kind that the Wall Street Journal looked at, but that really involved a minority of the people, the minority of the time. The thing that hasn't yet been mentioned directly in terms of the quantitative experience, it was that many people said, and especially the Orthodox and the Lutheran were saying, that the quantity and quality of shared worship at this event was greater than in earlier assemblies. There had always been a lot of worship, but this time there was a special place for that, a tent, which was used for nothing but worship and was used 4 times a day, or 3 times on days, in addition to major planned, specially planned services at the beginning and the end in both Saturday and Sunday. So that there was a great amount of common prayer and praise, which was very rich in its cultural and musical resources. They had Kyrie eleison in 6 different languages and musical idioms. And they had Alleluia in 6 different, or 5 or 6, I didn't go back to the book and count. But we were always learning the classical Christian responses in different cultural idioms. And yet that all fit together. It wasn't just sightseeing or cultural tourism. It was authentically shared worship, which also was recorded by the Wall Street Journal. So much for the form. That was 18 days. The first week on getting acquainted with the issues, the second week on starting to draft papers that you would share with each other, and then the last 3 days in passing all these papers through the plenary, in which especially the position statements, the brief declarations, really had to be debated, edited, rephrased, sent back to committee, and finally adopted. Unfortunately, this was the least efficient of the 3 assemblies I've gone to in terms of getting that work done. The documents came to the plenary too late. There wasn't enough time. The first time they weren't done when it was time to have the closing worship. So we had the closing worship and everybody who was committed to leave left, and then they came back for another 3 hours.
of Rump Session, in which obviously the last documents had to be rushed through with even less adequate discussion. I don't know, stay for that, the rest of us didn't, I guess. So much for the form. I think that's all I should say now and let the conversation. Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to add, Errol?
Well, I think that one of the big things that happened, we had to put the comments, brief comments, on a paper, and I put that the first place were the warships, second small groups. These were very efficient. And I think that this assembly will go down as being the one that is that consolidated the work of the World Council up to this point. And also, that inverted the order of peace and justice to justice and peace. It seems to me that there was quite a, I wouldn't say a consensus, but a convergence on the fact that you can have peace only when you have justice. And this was said many times, that this order has to be inverted when we speak about it. When you have justice, you will have peace. You have no peace without justice. And this came really out of the small groups. John forgot to say that the small groups also were computerized, not only in their composition, but later on the small groups were meeting together in a cluster. Each cluster, 8 clusters, the same as the issue groups, but different people. So that all these ideas really percolated, is that correct? Percolated up osmosis through the clusters, and then you had some issues coming out, some ideas coming out. And the same afterwards, other groups, issue groups, coming out quite with the same ideas. And the guidelines were one of the first documents we discussed, remember, it was still the last week.
Program.
And the guidelines for future action, I think, were very, very sober. Nothing revolutionary. One can notice is this, that I, as a person of the third world, am very happy, really, that one sees in a meeting where the first world dominates in numbers, that people are really getting down to the grassroots and comprehending that we are one world, one mankind, and this also is in unity. This has been very much stressed. It is not unity, only unity of the churches. It is unity of mankind. The two go together. And, well, this made us feel very good, because we of the world, the third world, there are not many people who spoke and talked, even in small groups. And, but even so, we managed to push our ideas up.
Yeah.
It was very democratic. The whole organization was very democratic.
Any questions at this point? And you can address them to anybody who has spoken or who may speak in the future who was also at the WCC Assembly.
I'd just like to comment that it was mentioned in one of the groups up there that to have a worship service such as was referred to is absolutely incomprehensible as a possibility 50 years ago. And that even though I want to be conservative, even 20 years ago would have been impossible. And that as we see so many of the processes of our church and the church in the world goes so slowly that we shouldn't fail to notice these changes that have taken place. And in the light of many things of that nature, it is too bad that the big issues before the press have been the items such as the Wall Street Journal pulled out, because that was really a minor emphasis. And one does, I just wanted to underscore, get the sense of how much easier it would be for people not to try to get together.
Yes.
It would be easier not to try to get the Orthodox to understand the representation should have some relationship to numbers. That was a big issue at one point. But any time that we work to get people with different backgrounds and different persuasions to find their common roots and common concerns, we're up against a big task, and it's really people that have been doing it are a piece of new.
Just one additional comment here, a brief one. Dr. Lazarus, when he was talking about that worship service, again, this is very important because he tied the experience of the worship service together again with this church unity document, Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry. And he said it wasn't until people got together and knelt down at the altar did they realize the ecumenical importance of the Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry document. So again, tying it in with what my friend from the American Lutheran Church said, it was that too became a flesh and blood experience for the first time. So go ahead. Anybody else?
Well, I was just curious, with such an international group, if when you broke into smaller groups, what language was always going to be the common
Too often, it had to be English.
Right, and I can understand it being in Vancouver this year, but I wondered in the past if...
Oh, it doesn't matter where in the world it is, it still has to be English. That's on general grounds of cultural colonialism.
My small groups couldn't be in German.
The small groups were sometimes shuffled so that they could use another language. So there were some in Spanish, some in German, but still mostly in English.
Russian, I don't think there was anyone only in Russian.
No, the Russians tried to mix with other people, but that meant they were always using a second language.
Sometimes a delegate would get up to speak his own language, but if it wasn't in one of the four official languages, then he had to bring an interpreter with him.
So it would be simultaneous translation.
In the plenary groups, there was always simultaneous translation into the originally four, and then they added Greek this time.
Just like
the Greeks thanked us.
Five.
Yeah, so just now it's five.
English is also language.
This is like being at the
with earphones. And people in a booth in the back talking all the time. So those in the plenary, you could use any language, but if it wasn't one of the five, you bring your interpreter to the mic. But in the small groups, of course, the only interpreting would be a friend sitting beside you.
There was a question over here.
I was just wondering, I read this article in the paper just before we left home about I think it was Pentecostal that was going to cause so much trouble at the Council of Churches. Did you have any trouble up there?
Well, it was
the McIntyre people.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were picketing the whole day.
Yeah. Carl McIntyre and Bob Jones of Bob Jones University.
And Ian Paisley.
Ian Paisley was there also from Northern Ireland. But those were just sideshows. Another sideshow that might be more significant to note, perhaps, was there was a statement that was disseminated by a group of evangelicals that, although did not fully endorse everything about the World Council of Churches, was basically a very supportive statement, saying that we have, as evangelicals, affirm what we see here, and you know, this really is the church and it's working along those lines.
Well, there were two evangelical statements. The group started together and then they divided. The smaller group was led by the Lutheran theologian, Peter Beierhaus, from Tübingen. And he didn't like the World Council and advised everybody to find another agency for cooperative Christianity. But the much larger group was led by Arthur Glasser, who had been at the China England Mission and then Fuller Theological Seminary School of World Mission, and brought together a number of people whose self-understanding is theologically evangelical, but are in the member churches. And were present, and they made a strong statement in favor of this activity, even though it had some shortcomings. One of the shortcomings was that the issue group statement on the matter of Christian witness, issue one, was very weak on the Christian missionary obligation.
The week that it was sent back by the plenary session, the only one that wasn't accepted the first time it came. And that's one of the things that they found fault with, understandably. But at the same time, they still believed in being there and participating in the process.
Any other questions? One back here.
I just had a comment. I happen to be working in Vancouver during a period of time that this conference was going on. The Vancouver television gave a great deal of coverage to the conference.
The public channel had it on all day.
Yes.
And excerpts
and
from
also all night. So that when I would get home from work, I could watch it a lot. I had a question. I saw a great deal of politicalization. Did this also extend into the small groups? Because I saw some of those sessions where the speaker really became very offensive because it was a politically directed at governments, and I thought my own impression or my own feeling was, why don't we direct this at our own group as Christians rather than at a political government when they were, and unfortunately this happened to come out of some of the third world countries. And I did hear some excellent comments too that were political in nature. Particularly from the young lady that was from the King of Tolls, the group down there that removed. I was not aware of all the problems that we as the United States have caused for these people. But the comments that I found were directed at governments that we as a nation had not done enough, and I thought, why don't we talk about we as Christians perhaps have not done enough? And I was wondering if that same spirit was in the smaller group.
Not
if only if there was if I only saw a very small portion of the action.
It arose where that was the topic. If you say Jesus Christ is the life of the world, and the Western world is atomizing South Pacific Islands, then it's appropriate that be talked about. So it came up where it came up. There were many of the issues where that kind of thing didn't arise. And the small groups, generally, were talking about more personal things or more cultural relative things of just getting acquainted. Obviously, sometimes if you talk about Afghanistan or if you talk about Central America, you can't avoid the political dimension coming in. And then, especially the Christians from authoritarian countries with authoritarian regimes aren't as free to say everything they think in public as we are.
There was an article in the Vancouver Sun, too, about the that the United States delegation, I believe it was a Lutheran delegation, did not have an opportunity to be heard on the floor until after television and press coverage was over.
Well, the least satisfactory thing was that the floor discussion was never adequate.
Yeah.
I doubt if it was ever intentional that a particular group or position got squeezed off. It's just that we can only have 18 people and you came 20th. And each one gets 3 minutes, and they'd even chop off bishops in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah.
I would like to add about this political things coming up in the small groups. Understanding, in my small group was so good, we had 4 Orthodox bishops, 2 Polish, 1 from Crete, from the island of Crete, the Greek, and 1 Bulgarian. These were the Orthodox. No, there was another Orthodox priest. Then we had people from East Europe. I was the only Latin American. There was 1 from Sudan, 1 from Indonesia, and a lady from Ireland, and an American from Washington. And the issues as they came up, we discussed them very naturally without referring to countries. In the issue group, however, that was very interesting, and I would like to share this with you. It was a very interesting experience. All of a sudden, a Russian delegate gets up and says that makes a statement that that human rights are always very well respected whenever a socialist revolution happens in a country. And he cited Cuba before and after the revolution, Nicaragua before and after the revolution, and Afghanistan and Ethiopia after the revolution. And this I couldn't stand, I'm a Lutheran. So I got up and said that I'm very sorry, but I had the opportunity in my life to visit Cuba before and after the revolution. And I had never, he also spoke about Afghanistan, and that I wanted only to tell this, that in my church's newspaper, we had 2 years ago a story about the invasion of the Lutheran headquarters in Addis Ababa, and that pastors were taken in prison and so forth. and that this happened after the revolution. And I know that before the revolution, things were very, very bad there. And in Afghanistan, as far as I can see, that when you have 2.5 to 3 million refugees, the human rights situation is not very good in that country. And then, brothers of ours contacted me and said, you have to put the Ethiopia situation on the floor. Because you are Latin American, and nobody will know that we are behind it. Ethiopian people really want this to come to the floor. And I didn't have a chance. I always put in my name. So they gave me an occasion only when group when the issue number 6 was discussed. And I got up, I supported the issue number 6 and got the Ethiopia situation in. on the floor. And later on, one of those who had asked me said, please never say that you ever met me in this room.
Yeah. I like to ask a question. What difference does it make that 17 or 18 days a bunch of people gathered in Vancouver under the auspices of an organization named the World Council of Churches? What difference? You know, you all tell us about your experiences. We appreciate that. As an observer, Dan, what do you think is the difference for Christendom?
Well, as I stressed before, and this is just the perspective that I gained from the discussions I had with people, so I'm trusting their insights too. I think the thing that will be remembered from Vancouver, again quoting Dr. Lazarus, is probably the push towards church unity. Other people might have different impressions, but this is one thing that incorporating the affirmation of the BEM document, the Baptism, Eucharist, and Ministry document, and also the worship life and how people really came away from there realizing that this really could be done. Might be other perspectives. One thing I wanted to add, by the way, and this is just a word of caution for those who read press reports. I think that it is as good to be critical about the press as it is to be critical about other institutions. I don't find that willingness in the general public. I think even though there is an increasing awareness of the fact that, you know, the press has its own particular concerns and interests. Good example, is the New York Times. The first story that the New York Times did on the World Council of Churches Assembly, if I'm not mistaken, was this the two inquiries from the Russian church people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the 15th day into the assembly, and they hadn't done anything on the Eucharistic service, and they hadn't done anything else, even though they didn't have their own reporter there, but they had all the wire services. And so if you were reading the New York Times for 15 days beginning July 24th, the only thing you would have known about the World Council of Churches Assembly were those two letters by the time of the 15th day. So that's just a matter of perspective. I guess, just briefly too, on the level of the social statements and political statements, I'm not one to dismiss those out of hand. I think those are important to have for the churches. But I, to me, they've always seemed somewhat transitory and just a part of another chorus. I don't think that it's bad to hear the voices of the people meeting in Vancouver. But I think we have to look for perhaps a different significance than the social statement.
I'd make an analogy, not quite parallel. What answer would you get if you asked that question about going to church today? At any one time, it didn't make you much difference. It was predictable. You go home being about who you were. And yet in the long run, it's good to be the kind of people that celebrate being the kind of people that talk about Christ in the world. A World Council phenomenon, whether it be the ongoing bureaucracy with its commissions and staff, or the assemblies every 7 or 8 years, celebrates in a unique way that the body of Christ is more than national and more than denominational. And that just ought to be celebrated. We could maybe do it better, shorter, cheaper, or more in a more free church way or a more Lutheran way, but we just ought to do it. and probably better ought to do it poorly than not at all, just like church. If we set higher standards for it, then it's not a very efficient agency.
What do you see then as where is it going, the World Council of Churches? Where is the next assembly going to be? Did they say that in the process between now and then? Did they,
they didn't tell us that.
This is going to be decided usually 3-4 years before.
They usually decide a little way down the road. In fact, the time before they had a change with just 1 year's delay. They'd already printed things for meeting in Jakarta and then they met in Nairobi. So that's still open. It won't be in North America, of course, but they kind of rotate around the world. It was in North America in Evanston 54, and now it probably won't be anymore in our lifetime. As Arnold said, it was consolidation. There was nothing really new as in 68, the Third World Development Thrust was, or in 75, the acceptance of the program to combat racism was. There was nothing that new. Peace and justice was probably the theme that got the most attention, but what it said there was also consolidation of what had been said in other peace movements, church peace witnesses around the world for the last 50 years. So it's maybe a significant part of it is that it has come to a kind of adulthood, and it doesn't have to go anywhere. It doesn't have to cross a new threshold every 7 years, but it keeps its movement going. And then the rather conservative consolidating focus on a ministry document or a convergence document, a document in ecclesiology, in the life of church, is probably a sign of that consolidation.
How do you see the strength and participation of the Far Eastern churches?
The way churches get to be represented depends on whether they're part of a larger polity structure. For instance, the Methodist, the North American Methodist Church includes many of its overseas people, so overseas people will get in as North American Methodist representatives sometimes, so it's hard to know what is fair representation. The number of Japanese and Chinese from the rim of Asia was very small. Continental China isn't represented at all because it doesn't have a church that has asked to be a member church. The Pacific Islands were largely represented, probably beyond proportion to population, because there are a large number of small churches and because it's the most Christian part of the world, and the percentage of people belonging to church from the total population. So Australia and Pacific were strongly represented, Japan and China weakly. South Asia, rather strongly, is Burma, India, Sri Lanka.
We probably have time for one more question. Anybody who hasn't asked one? Other?
How's going back Korea?
Yeah, there are many strong Korean churches that don't believe in the World Council because of their conservatism, but there were two Presbyterian churches represented, and I don't know if other... One of the program people was Pastor Park from one of the Presbyterian churches in Korea.
Do you have... No? Okay.
Waiting for the kill.
Okay, the kill is here.
Just wanted to say the last thing, not a question. In preparation for this assembly, there were teams that were sent out from various churches to other parts of the world.
Visitation teams.
That's something I don't know if that's new or not, but I think it enriched the discussion groups considerably, what I heard, because people had to become rather deeply aware of what was going on politically and in the religious area in another part of the world before they got to the assembly.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.